Blog Talk Radio.
There will be days that just go wrong, make you wanna holler and shout, your hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. When you think that things can't get much worse, in a second, oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace is gonna be fine. You got what it takes down in time. Road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Stand in your way.
They're always saying,
always saying what you cannot do. Don't stop chasing your dreams and working hard to make them come true. Oh. And if it ever gets too tough, just remember. Don't kill you, makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I'll give you one better time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.
D-Rock Country had a some discussion, Dan, with Kim this week about her foundation for common sense, and D-Rock was there listening in and talking and had a great conversation with him. What a patriot and what two hardworking people. I told Kim, you just keep on keeping on, girl. She's working really, really hard with the foundation for common sense, and it's a great project. I think she's got a great way of describing it. She says, you know, if you'll think about it as the United Way for Politics. And she's an expert in this. And we're going to have her on the show next week. She's going to be our guest, and we're going to talk about the Foundation for Common Sense. And, Dan, I've never known Kim to call in when D-Rock didn't call in with her. So we'll probably look forward to having them both next week for that. We're going to have a great show tonight. Some big things happening. I'll tell you, I love to watch news go viral. I absolutely love to watch news go viral. And this morning I woke up to a little six-year-old boy being suspended and being put on the record sexual harassment. Why sexual harassment, you ask? Why? Was it because he touched some girls behind? No. Was it because he gave some sexual innuendo? No. It's because he kissed her on the hand. Kissed her on the hand. And I talked to Tammy, the principal, today a little bit. I had a nice little conversation with her, a short conversation. But let me tell you, she didn't get it. She didn't get it. See, number one, Dan, and it's just you and I right now. Jennifer hasn't logged on. Rodney will be logging on here in a minute, and we'll talk about what Rodney's doing. But, you know, Dan, why should a parent have to explain to a six-year-old what sexual harassment is?
They shouldn't. You know, what the left is doing is they're taking where there wasn't a problem and they're creating it. Back in our day, they called it puppy love. Heck, Paul Anka sang about it. I mean, we would look back at something like this. If I saw that happening with my granddaughter, I would sit there and go, aw, how cute. You know, there is a total lack of thinking. All they want to do is create problems and rule over us. I mean, I've done some research, and this is verbatim Hitler Youth. And these people need to change. I mean, they are destroying this country like a cancer from within. And I let in on the superintendent. I left a message and said, you know, did your mother not love you, or are you suffering from altitude sickness, or are you always this stupid? I mean, I really, really got upset because they're taking it to new levels. I mean, a six-year-old doesn't even know what sexual harassment is. Heck, I doubt they could even pronounce it. I mean, what is wrong with these people? I just don't understand. I mean, where were they when they were growing up? Were they born under a rock and stayed there until they were 30? You know, did their parents not love them or something? Or they just want to create problems? And I honestly think that's the latter is the truth, is they want to create problems. And they thrive off of the animosity of everybody else. It's just, it's insane. What we need to do is to stand up and tell these people enough is enough and things are going to have to change. And if they don't like it, you know, tough cookies, because we're taking back our country one way or another.
You better believe it, Dan. And I agree with you 100%. I think the left tells us exactly what they want to do. They always have. We just don't listen, and the American people just don't know it. But one of the philosophies of the left is to neuter men and women. They want everything to be the same, and I'm going to be very politically incorrect here. Men and women are not the same. They are not built the same. They do not have the same emotions. They're built for two different purposes. And that doesn't mean a woman can't be a truck driver, and that doesn't mean a man can't be a homemaker. I'll tell you, because I'm a homemaker. I stay home and I take care of the kids, and I love it. And I'm homeschooling a four-year-old. She's almost ready to go into the second grade, and she hasn't even turned five yet, and I love it. And my sister calls me her stay-at-home mom. I love it. But you know what? I've got the right to do that. The problem with the left is they want to make everybody that way. And, you know, when it comes to little boys in the school, they want to take away all the things that make little boys masculine. And when it comes to little girls at school, they want to take away all the things that make them that make them feminine. And they want to make them the same. They want everything to be fair. Well, you know, it's not fair if the little boy gets to be a little boy and the little girls don't get to be a little boy. You know, we see it in all kinds of things. In football, you got women around the country, girls around the country want to be on the boys' football team. Play on the girls' football team. There's a reason why you don't want a girl out in the middle of a bunch of rough boys that are twice her size landing on top of her. That's just common sense. And you know, Dan, as I read that this morning, I just got infuriated. I went, here we go again. And I said, you know what, but that's okay. That's okay. Because I found it on Drudge. And when anything goes to drudge, you just automatically know about 30 to 33, 34 million people a day view the drudge website. So at that point, I knew it was viral. When I followed the link, Drudge linked it to Breitbart. Matt Drudge and Andrew Breitbart were friends, and there's a lot of linkage there. Breitbart's got a huge following. But I'll tell you, Dan, what made me happy. You know, we got a station, KTVU, out here in Oakland, Channel 2. It's the channel I give them a big shout-out because it's a great station. It's the channel I watched all my kid programs on. Let me tell you, there were some great kid shows on at a time when, you know, you only had about three or four stations. KTVU, Channel 2, out of Oakland. And you know what? I follow their Facebook, and up pops pops this article right there from KTVU. So everybody in Oakland is getting it. I'm sure they are broadcasting that this evening on the evening news. And I looked around, and wow, it went viral quick. And, you know, Dan, that's what makes me excited. That is absolutely what makes me excited every single time, because I get this watch as something that 20 years ago might have just stayed quiet and watch the story spread. And then I started watching who was sharing my links. And, you know, I'm in this a homeschool. I'm attached to a homeschool group. They shared that link. And within a couple hours, it had already over 200 likes on it. So I knew a lot of people saw it. And what's going on right now? I called. I called and talked to the school. In fact, I called twice. The first time I called, I got a hold of the secretary, and I told him, the executive producer attending for Truth Radio, and just wanted to what's going on with your fiasco there? And she said, well, I can't talk about it. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. I want to congratulate you on making Matt Drudge, making the Drudge Report today, because that's 33 million people. And I tell you, Dan, she was on the verge of tears. She was on the verge of tears. And that was exciting. And because, you know, that means that there's a lot of people calling the school. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take that kind of activism. Then I went to the Denver site, or the Colorado site that was broadcasting that I linked to from Breitbart. And the comments were going crazy on there. So the local people aren't happy. The national people aren't happy. The activists aren't happy. The liberals aren't really happy. The Dems aren't happy. You know, the far left, they make up about 9-12% of our country's population. But the Democratic Party makes up a lot more than that. And I'll tell you, left and right alike, we're disgusted with this. And that is exactly what it takes to get it down. You know, we did, it hadn't been too long ago, we were fighting the Jared Markham fight. And when we did, let me tell you, it was insanity. Right now, though, I want to take a few moments. We don't have Rodney for a whole long time, and I think we've got him on the line. Right now, Rodney is getting ready to do something I have been looking forward to all year, waiting for him. Rodney's going to go live in a shed for 10 days, and he is going to do some man, it's bipartisan. It's real, you know, we don't use the word compassion enough. We've got our troops. They work overseas. It's a hard life on the family. Sometimes you get around time, and you don't, they just don't have enough. And let me tell you, I'm going to let Rodney talk about it and explain it because he can better than I can. But Romney's doing his part, and I know, Romney, I am freezing up here in Springville, California. I'm about the same elevation as you are right now. I know you've got snow on the ground up there, though. Romney, I'm going to pass it to you to tell us about living in a shed for 10 days out in this cold.
All right, yeah, you know, actually, I had a friend of mine from high school today. I said, yeah, about ready to move in the shed. So you and your wife fighting? But... yes, I'm actually broadcasting live from Sacramento, California. So I've actually dropped down. Where I have snow at my house is 3,000-foot elevation. I'm all the way back down in Sacramento, and we don't have any snow. It's in the 40s, which is really good compared to the 19s where I've been. So there's no snow on the ground here. But this is all part of Yellow Ribbon America. It's a project we started 10 years ago with Brad White, and I live in a tough shed in the parking lot of Sacramento's Art and Fair Mall for 12 straight days, 24 hours a day, 7 days straight, or 12 days straight. And we raise toys and donations to go to the families and children of our deployed and in-need military. And part of that is because there's thousands of organizations. You got TV stations, radio stations. You got Red Cross, Salvation Army, even the Marines, Toys for Tots. All of those donations and toys go to the children of very deserving, underprivileged children. Ours is the only organization. It is 100% goes to military. Even the Marines collect Toys for Tots, distribute them, and then come to me for toys for the families in need because they can't touch their own toys. So it's an awesome thing. Yes, it gets cold out here. I've been through heavy winds, torn up canopies, freezing cold weather, been through all kinds of stuff, had a generator stolen 1 year while I was sleeping at night. But at the same time, you flip that around to 2,000 soldiers coming home to Travis Air Force Base in California, haven't seen their families in 2 years. The kids don't even know that parents are coming home yet, and we distribute the toys to them. They have a Christmas party. Santa Claus hands out toys to the children. And there's a very end. He goes, oh, kids, I forgot. I have one more present for you. They roll the door up to the parents coming home to the children. It's stuff like that to remind me why I've done this for now my 10th year doing it. So biggest thing is people can come by here. It's really easy now. It's grown so well. Come to Sacramento's Arden Fair Mall, drop a toy off, drop off a check, cash, credit card. You can call me on the phone. Thanks to technology, I have Square. Make donations. It's an awesome, amazing organization. Our Monday show, we've had Sidney Brown on, 100th Troop Command, and we had J.J. Treadway from the 40th ID Infantry Division. It's just an amazing thing. And all the volunteers we get out here, all the people I know. So that's why I do it. And I am here as of tonight. Tomorrow morning is our press conference at 11 a.m. to kick the whole thing off. And I'm living in a shed and glad to do it.
Wow, that's incredible, Rodney. I mean, I think that's great. And, you know, I wish I could be there supporting you. I mean, I think that's a wonderful program. And, you know, not enough people sit around and support our troops. We know our government's turned their backs on them. You know,
well, a lot of people assume they're in the military, they have a job, so they've got money. That's actually not the case because you got a lot of these guys coming home from deployment. Their company's out of business. They don't have a job anymore. Military people are not your traditional, I'm in trouble, I want help, or the slouchers or slackers. They're too proud to ask for help. That's why we've created, you know, the organization with family readiness coordinators. Every unit has a point of contact that they can go to because they don't want to be out there going to the Salvation Army or something going, I need help. So people don't realize they need this. This matters. You got guys coming home from deployment, and they're living in their cars, and that's not cool.
No, it isn't. I think it's, you know, disgusting how what we're doing to our military today. I mean, these people give it all. They don't ask for anything in return. And they do it for love of country. And, you know, they do what they feel is right. And, you know, the thanks we give them is to tell them to go to and live in a car, you know, because they don't have a job. You know, this economy, I'm blaming 100% on this administration. They have put these people in that position. And this leader, or quote, unquote, in the White House is turning his back on all these individuals. I mean,
well, it goes back farther than that. This all started with during Bush Sr., but especially during Clinton years, closing all the military bases. Back in the day when they used to joke, you know, why is the military paying $400 for a hammer? That's stupid. Well, let's cut the military budget. They ended up cutting the pay of the people who need it most, which are the enlisted people. So, you know, what my son makes right now as a Marine is about half what I used to make when I was in the Navy in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, it's disgusting. I mean, I am, you know, I am so proud of these people. And, you know, I take my hat off to them because, you know, they're doing something for this country that, you know, the left is just trying to tear apart. And I am so, so disgusted. And it's time for people to get off the damn chairs and get out there and become active and say enough is enough of this crap. And no, we are not going to cut our budgets for the military, and we aren't going to force these poor young men and women to risk their lives to be treated like crap and then to be exploited by our government.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have
that's
a vice...
One thing. Go ahead. A vice what?
I said we had a vice president who has committed high treason. And what did they do? They exploited it even further. They made a friggin' movie and, you know, revealed top secret information to Hollywood, and then they made a movie over how the SEALs work.
The vice president, you're talking about the guy that's on the currently on the side of a milk carton because nobody's seen him since the shutdown of the government, right?
Exactly. You know?
Well, see, with our organization, we've made it really easy. The focus is, obviously, I'm in California, and if anyone wants to help, it's so easy nowadays. Every little bit helps. They can go to Yellow Ribbon America on Facebook. You're going to find all the information. They can call me. My cell phone number is out there. I can take a credit card over the phone. Companies can come down. If you're in the area, come down and volunteer. But the ultimate goal here, what we've started building over 9 years, is the entire purpose of our group is networking you where you can help the military in your own community. We've started in 9 years. It started here in Sacramento and Orange County. It's now all over California. Tons of people involved. We've also got people doing stuff in Illinois, New York, Virginia, Colorado, Idaho, Texas, you know, where you help people in your own community, you know. So it's pretty awesome.
Well, God bless you for what you're doing, and you know, we us here are 100% behind you, and we'll do what we can to support you.
Well, thank
Bob,
you very much.
This is Jennifer.
Hello, Jennifer. How are you? Yes.
God bless America. God bless America. Rock on. And for those that say, "Go Navy," Semper Fi. We have, I will tell you, I'm old enough to remember.
The last.
When,
are you old enough to remember
we,
the last time the Navy lost the Army-Navy game?
Well, I remember. I remember the pride that we had in our military, and our servicemen got really good health care. You know,
yeah.
And then something happened, and they decided that our military men and women that were living in, I know my father was living in the VA nursing home, and this was back in the 2001 or two. He was living in the VA nursing home. They had pretty much stripped all the cooks from the facility, and they brought in what we call box lunches, box dinners, just the things that they do to cut costs for those military men and women who are fighting for our freedom, it's beyond me. I don't, you know, so my hat's off to you. You know,
right.
I think I commend you for being willing to do this. One of the things that, you know, we found that I think is key is a lot of times you have organizations that have these, you know, donate to the military, to the children, but there's a lot of red tape. And it takes a lot of time to get past the red tape to be able to get the goods to the people that really need it. And we found same issue when we were dealing with Katrina and the Red Cross, that there's an awful lot of red tape, and you've got to follow paperwork, protocol, and all that stuff. you know, and these are just families that are hurt.
Yeah. Well, see, and part of that is, unfortunately, in every volunteer organization I've ever been part of, you find some, there's always that one person that wants to make it all about them, and that always throws a monster wrench in the entire project, and then you end up with red tape, because the red tape is created because somebody else screwed it up for the rest of us. Well, we've spent 9 years making sure that this has never been about us. We've helped organizations, and our name was absolutely attached to it in any way, shape, or form. We did a party for a bunch of troops coming home this year and got volunteers out there, got the money to fund the whole thing. Nobody even knows Yellow Ribbon America is part of it. Military families got help. So, you know, and we've earned that respect over the years. So, you know.
There's probably a family who has come back. They're shell-shocked. There's a serviceman or woman who is dealing with, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder. And there's many, many things that have developed from being overseas, being inactive on the front lines. You know, you just don't know. You cannot say that you know until you've walked in somebody's shoes. I have never been there, but I have talked to various, you know, military men and women who, you know, it's like you wake up in the middle of the night at the least bit of sound because you're shell-shocked, you know, and your spouse is in the bed next to you, you know, having to deal with that stuff on a daily basis. So it's not like you can just easily come home from being deployed and find work sometimes. You know, and families are hurting, and this is Christmas time, and I know that we have, you know, the current administration seems to be more interested in supporting our terrorists overseas and those illegal aliens that seem to be coming into the country than doing our due diligence to have respect and protect our own service men and women. So I commend you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. And one of the things people don't realize is not only are they coming with PTSD, and last night my co-host Brian on the show pointed out he's got friends. You're coming out with PTSD. No two cases are the same. No two solutions are the same. And you definitely don't want to be somebody's marketing PR piece because you've got an issue. It's like even here we have the vet center comes down here with counselors. We have it walled off. The media is not allowed near it. Anyone goes near that with a camera, I'll knock them out. You know, we're not here to take pictures of it. But even furthermore, you know, you got these guys that are they're trained for a specific job, and let's say infantry or sniper or special forces. That's not something you can go to Best Buy and throw on your resume. It doesn't translate in the civilian world. So how do you get a job with that? You don't walk into Best Buy and go, yeah, I got sent over, could tell my wife where I was, and I shot people.
Oh, yeah.
Let's hire you, you know. So that's another problem, you know. The economy is bad, but also how do you translate what you've done in the military? Because I was a search and rescue diver. I'd get out. I like diving. I had to recertify for PADI because they're like, yeah, your military training is not what we want anyone to see you doing in the public world.
Yeah,
I had a friend of mine. And stuff like that.
I had a friend of mine who flew F-4s and then transitioned into the F-16s on the 107th Air Guard. And when he got out of the military, he had to go and get his private pilot's license.
Yep.
After, you know, flying these multi-million-dollar fighters, and he couldn't legally fly a Cessna. I mean,
well, a lot of 747s, they handle differently. So, yeah.
I mean, these people, it's stupid, you know, how we treat these poor people. And my ex was a, well, she is a psych nurse and was one of the founders of Loma Linda's Department of Nursing. And she's in charge of, she founded Loma Linda University's Department of Nursing. They just opened it.
Where my mother went to school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, her name is Michelle Button, and she's in charge of the Behavioral Medicine Center there. And
I was
she's
raised
also,
by Adventist.
You know, so I know a little bit about PTSD. And, you know, these people, see, from the outside, they look normal, like everybody else. And what happens is it's an emotional thing. I had a friend of mine whose brother, I remember when I was younger, had just gotten back from Vietnam right around the 4th of July. And we were going to go down to watch the fireworks. And somebody threw an M-80 and landed, you know, probably about 20 yards away from us, went off. And it was like all of a sudden the guy was gone. And
oh, yeah, we had a kid down here at the shed one time volunteering, and a car backfired. He was inside of the shed crying for like 2 hours.
This guy jumped into a ditch with mud, you know, and it's like you could see him shaking. And it was like, you know, the poor guy had just gotten back from Vietnam. And, our military doesn't transition you back into the real world. They just throw you out there.
They're starting to. We've worked on that a lot. The counseling centers and actually counseling the people before they go in or for deployment and counseling available when they come out. And that's been a huge, huge thing.
Well, especially when they come out because, you know, none of us could understand what these people went through. You know, unless you could walk in their shoes, you know, you don't know. You don't understand what combat is. You don't understand when you have people who are out to kill you.
My dad, who was a Marine, said it, made a comment one time that was absolutely the perfect analogy. The perfect soldier doesn't think for himself, he follows orders. The perfect employee takes initiative and thinks for himself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean,
I was like, oh, damn.
Well, it's true. I mean, although they're all taught to take command, you know, as a, you know, if the lieutenant's shot, command goes to the sergeant, and it goes down.
Yeah,
to the
that's chain of command stuff, but the average E1 through E5 is different,
right.
Especially if they're only in for 2 or 3 years or 4 years and they get out. But, you know, it's totally different. It took me a while to transition back through it, you know. Fortunately, my first job was at a radio station, and I was the soundboard guy, so I got to hide in a room and not talk to anybody. Believe it or not, Scott, I didn't actually like talking all the time.
Well, I mean, you know, as I said, I think what you're doing is great. And give a few of them a hug for me and tell them there are people out there that really care what they're doing. And we'll do everything we can to help them get back into the swing of things. And
cool.
The real world, and we're behind them 100%. I mean,
well, thank you guys. And if anyone in the station, anybody listening needs information, like I said, Facebook, Yellow Ribbon America or yellowribbonamerica.com. My cell phone number's all over the place. Call me. Call Brad White, our national director. Our press conference is tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. I live here 24/7 in the parking lot, which is kind of fun. Cheesecake Factory feeds me, and I can go shopping at Best Buy, which my wife hates that.
Cool.
I'm here from now to the 22nd. I love doing it. Wouldn't stop for a second. And I'm going to get back to unloading my U-Haul truck and setting up because I got to be ready for tomorrow morning's press conference. Thank you guys very much for letting me share this on here.
Well, thank you, Rodney.
Guys, take care.
You too.
Definitely, Rodney. And you stay warm, my friend. I'm looking forward to watching this go on this next 10 days. I just think it's awesome. Anybody that knows, that listens to me on any kind of blog talk, knows the ground troops are important. You know, we do a lot of things on social networking, and that's great. I was able to spread a lot of news today on social networking. I was able to introduce some people today to help each other out on social networking. There's a lot of great things you can do sitting at your computer from the living room. But none of those mean anything. Unless there's ground troops out there, people out there, out on the road, out on the street, doing these things. And this one is very important. You know, I'm a firm believer that both sides of the aisle have not done enough over the decades to make sure our troops are taken care of, both our veterans as well as our military that is working right now. They need more pay. They need better benefits. They need to be taken care of better. It's a shame. The ultimate sacrifice that you can give is to lay down your life for your fellow man. And men and women that go out, they sign up for the military. They're putting their lives in their hands. There's a chance that they could lose their lives from that decision. And many have, many hundreds of thousands over the years, protecting our freedoms, making this who we are. You know, Dan and I, we go back a lot on history. And, you know, the Revolutionary War and the Civil War and Vietnam and Korea and the two world wars, so many things, so many times that men and women have lost their lives and families have lost their father or their mother. And it's important. It's very important. So, again, folks, if you can give Rodney some support, please do that. Please do so however you can. It's important. You know, Dan, We have a high respect, you and I especially, a common between the two of us, for history. And I tell you, Rodney's making history. In the last 10 years, he has put himself out there to change lives. And it may not be a history that's going in the history book, but it is a history to a lot of families. And Rodney told me last week when I spoke to him that, you know, Scott, this isn't a situation where these people come back year after year and take. They participate in it 1 year, and they benefit from it 1 year, and then the next year they're out there helping. And then the next year more people are out there helping. And it grows and it grows and it grows. And there are children that are going to grow up in this country, and they're going to look back at their childhood, and they're going to remember this situation that Rodney's in right now. They're going to remember Christmas being a little bit better because some people that had a little bit more were able to help give to those who have a little bit less. And that's what this is all about. You know, we oftentimes talk on this show, especially even, about our welfare society and Social Security and different things and how it's abused and not right. And the left is always wanting to make a fishing net out of a safety net. But it's also important as we do that we don't just bash the one solution, but then we provide another solution. And the solution has always been fellow man taking care of fellow man. It's always worked out better that way. You know, I've probably in my lifetime given away more than I had. I love to give. I love to give to people. I love to spend my money on my three nieces. I can't imagine how much of the little amount that I've made over the last 10 years that I've spent on them. That gives me joy to do that. And we live in a country where we have people that are in need. We have people that are hungry. We have people that are homeless. And I don't believe the best way to take care of those people is to provide them by the government. If you take $10, just take the $10, and I've got $10, and I give it to the government in taxes. Number one, it's going to cost about $3 for the government to even collect that. And then by the time it goes through the red tape in Washington, D.C., comes back to the state, goes back through channels, out of that $10, you've probably got a couple of dollars left is all in order to help people that are actually in need. And so to let the government take care of everybody just doesn't work. But, man, on the other side, the American people, we've been so giving. You know, we give a lot of money. This country gives a lot of tax dollars around the world to countries that are in need, to people that are in need. But the private money that goes out in this country to help people is huge. It overshadows that. In fact, the last time, I think it's like two-thirds more that the American people give when times are need. When we had 9/11, people forked over their money, and they sent money to help. And that's the way we're supposed to do it. Fellow man's supposed to take care of fellow man. And Rodney, I just have to really give it to you. I think it's a great project. I think it's a great thing that he does every year. I'll tell you, I wish I wasn't in the middle of a move to Texas because I'd take a drive up there and spend one night up there with Rodney, or a couple of nights with Rodney, because I just think it's an awesome thing. Our troops deserve better. They fight our battles. We want to go back.
You know,
go ahead, Dan.
I said, you know, I feel the same way, and I agree with you 100% that, you know, charity is something that we believe in. We don't believe that the government should do it. The government doesn't belong there. There are people who do need support, you know, through no fault of their own. And I am, you know, this is where I feel that, you know, Medicaid, Medicare, and, you know, other social service programs do have their place. And I have no problem with that. The abuse has been cut down significantly. And but I'm hearing politicians, I hate to say it, Senator Marco Rubio just gave a speech about saying he wants to attack Medicare or Medicaid. And I turned around and said, you know, if you look at the books, yeah, these two programs say they're the highest in the federal budget. But let's try a little different tack. Let's remove the EPA. Let's get rid of the Department of Homeland Security. They, you know, these the EPA was created in 1969 by Nixon. Well, we don't need it. And all it's doing is really it's harming our economy. Department of Homeland Security was created during the Bush administration, and Obama's turning it into his own little military. Let's get rid of that. Why don't we get rid of the federal the Fed and bring them into the Department of Treasury instead? Why don't we redo the SEC? Why don't we get rid of these earmark programs, you know, and where somebody's studying the mating habits of some lizard, you know, and spending hundreds of millions of dollars. Since this administration has been in office, 750,000 federal jobs were created. Do you know how much money that translates out to be? If you got rid of these programs that are nothing but politically for politicians to gain, then we'd have plenty to support Medicaid and Medicare. You know, why are we going after our elderly and our disabled people? You know, this does not make sense. Yet our government is so damn large that it is, you know, it's ridiculous. And what do they want to do? They want to go after the ones that are popular, you know, that are going to, you know, that they know that nothing will ever result from it, and that people are going to be screaming, you know, everybody wants to scream and yell about Medicare or Medicaid. Well, you know something? Who takes Medicare? The elderly. I mean, in other countries, the elders are revered. You know, they are respected. Here, they're treated like trash. You know, and so are the disabled. You know, those who can't, you know, for one reason or another, you know, are unable to work. And, you know, this country has, you know, it's like they're so after themselves, they don't look at what is necessary. And, you know, there are so many programs in the federal government that can be tossed that are costing us billions and billions and billions of dollars, that if you just simply eliminated them, you know, you could pay for Medicare and Medicaid together.
and cover it just by getting rid of these programs. Nobody would even know the difference. I mean, if you took the Fed and put it as part of the Treasury, you know how much money would be saved? You know how much corruption would be saved? If you got rid of the EPA, all of a sudden you took this administration's strong arm and you take it away. We don't need overregulation in this country. Obviously, the more regulations we place, it's been a proven fact over history, has not worked. So if something's broken, why keep on going with it? Get rid of it. You know, the EPA has proven to us that it is ineffective and it doesn't work. It's nothing but a political tool. Get rid of it. You know how much money would be saved by that? I mean, if we're going to look to cut, this is where we need to cut. And when it comes down to what the people don't have, you know, rather than yelling and screaming at people, you know, how bad something is, why don't people get off their duff and start volunteering? I mean, if you add it up on my own, I have over 30 years of volunteering for various programs. You know, I've worked with parent quadriplegics. I volunteered on an ambulance. I've been involved in search and rescue. I have given so much to this country, and it's like I'm not out to get any credit for that. But this is, you know, because you wouldn't believe how many wonderful people are out there that give so much to themselves, and they sacrifice so much. And they don't want a hand or, you know, anything like that. They do it because it's in their heart. And you see, that's the beauty behind this country. You know, we have a country that is filled with tens of millions of people who really, really care, who are out there trying to help the fellow man. And, you know, through the actions of the progressive movement, they are being stifled, and their hands are being tied, and they're no longer able to help as much as they wanted to because of an out-of-control government. And this is what we need to start doing, is we need to chop the size of this government down to size. We need to, you know, we need to put an end to the progressive movement. We need to get rid of this socialism, the ideals this administration and that of, you know, previous Clinton administration and Carter and LBJ. You know, we need to get rid of this ideal that they're trying to push on us. That's nothing but a sham. And, you know, this is where I think we need to go. I'm passing it back over to you, Scott.
Well, I'm going to pass it right on over to Jennifer because, you know, you really said a mouthful, Dan, and it's huge. And Jennifer lives in a district that embodies this, a lot of what you just talked about. Government overreach and government trying to get their fingers. You know, government cannot micromanage. I will forever love Herman Cain for that phrase. Government cannot micromanage. And Jennifer, down there in the 7th District of Alabama, you've got the black belt. You have got some of the best dirt in the country. And government overreach, government micromanage on a smaller level than the IRS, on a smaller level than the EPA, although they're involved in it. But there's some local stuff, national stuff, that messes it all up. So, Jennifer, I'm going to pass it back to you to continue on with what Dan's been talking about.
Well, I was just thinking about, you know, the VA hospital that we have here in Tuscaloosa, which is it's a part of 7th District. Just thinking about, I mean, now we've got this, the farm bill that's being out there. I don't know if you've seen any of the news about that and watching even stuff on C-SPAN, you know, but let's just go ahead and assume that we're going to have this major catastrophe and that crops are not going to be able to be grown because of these bad, bad, you know, climate conditions and stuff. But let's just go ahead and pay these farmers off, you know, for what reason? So they can sit down on their butts, you know, and collect a check. And then what do we get? You know, poor produce, you know, and just many, many things that just, they're just, you know, it's just another part of government entitlement, you know, and whatever happened to, you know, living off the land, really, really understanding that and having really good, then we have these issues with, you know, contaminated soil. And how do you even know that when you're getting what is supposedly organic produce, how do you know that it's really organic? Because Monsanto has just, you know, has just done their due diligence to infiltrate so many places, you know, and stuff. But we have an issue down here where you've got a majority of the landowners down in the Black Belt region that live in Chicago and Atlanta. So people don't even own the rights to their land that they live on. You know, they're just renting. But we've got a guy who ran for Congress in 2012 and 2010 who had a farm idea of building hoop houses that are very wet, structured so that they can withstand all wet kind of weather conditions. And you grow your produce inside these hoop houses, and you only need an acre's worth of land to do this. And that was one of the things that he ran on last in 2012 was the idea of bringing job money back to the Black Belt of Alabama. People said, oh, you're just trying to put them back on the plantation. You know, you're going to have them back cotton farming again like they did back in the 60s, you know, all this civil rights stuff. And but what's happening is they're getting ready to do their first ribbon cutting down in a little area of Moundville, Alabama, in the Black Belt. And they're actually creating and providing jobs, and they've gotten produce that's going to be going into various grocery stores around the area in the district. And this, you know, it's going to be some major press release on this. It's real exciting to see. And here's a man who took advantage of America's entrepreneurship and said, you know, I live in the great United States, and I have an idea. I want to see it happen. So he did his due diligence, you know, and there's been pictures that have been going up periodically to show how things have been developing and stuff. And I am really excited. I think they're having a ribbon cutting on the 19th of December. I'm looking forward to being able to go. I know they're trying to get Governor Bentley to come as well. But, you know, this is the kind of stuff. I mean, we have, don't even get me started about the little boy who's getting suspended from school because they're saying he was sexually harassing another kid for kissing him on the hand. You know, and I remember growing up as a kid, you know, watching The Little Rascals and, you know, various other shows of that nature, and what we saw back then was back in the day when I Love Lucy and his, you know, and Reggie Arnaz were sleeping in twin beds, you know, and so this government overreach, we've got so much of it going on right now, it's pathetic. You know, my son came home today, he says, well, we just got our Common Core math books today. I'm like, oh, no, here we go. You know, government overreach. Then, you know, what's going to be more important? I remember when I was living in Austin, Texas, and there was a big, huge movement to try to save a piece of property because a creek ran through it, and they had said that the salamander was going extinct, and they had to protect it. So we're more concerned about protecting the salamander than we are about protecting human life. And there were people that were living in that area that were being affected, people that were being affected on a negative level, you know, and you know, I believe in, you know, recycling, you know, and I believe in protecting, you know, our land and our animals and that sort of thing. But there comes a time when, you know, we got to say, you know, where do we draw the line? Where's the boundary here? You know, I think that my son's life, to me, is more important than a salamander's life. But that's just me. You know, we have so many issues. I know that one of the things that's going to be coming up in Alabama in the next election cycle is the pro-life issue, because we've got an HB 360 bill where not only now, you know, you have to do the sonogram, but they're going to make it so that the doctor absolutely has to show the mother of that child the screen, the sonogram screen, and he or she has to identify everything that they're seeing on the screen. And they say that the success rate of women changing their mind and deciding not to have the abortion is great. We've already got the bill passed that doctors can no longer Skype in to perform abortions. They had doctors from other states, other countries, that were getting on a Skype call and instructing people that were not even qualified, didn't have the license to, but they were instructing people what to do on how to do to kill the baby. You know, this government overreach. It's time that, you know, we, the people, take a stand. And, you know, I still have questions about what happened to our Navy SEALs in Benghazi, what happened fast and furious. So many questions that are unanswered. People want to sidestep, you know, and don't want to take the opportunity to really get to the bottom of what's really going on. Now we're going to be dealing with, you know, one of the up-and-coming issues that we're talking about here in Alabama is voter fraud. You know, we're getting people trained to know how to spot it, how to stop it. You know, how do we prevent the transient, the illegal immigrant, and the dead people from voting in 2014? Well, we got to have more eyes and ears on the ground. People got to get off the couches and be willing to go out there and get boots on the ground. Because let me tell you, the progressive is on the move. I am understanding that they're already training their people on how to do such things. And I was watching a video that Sharon Engel did. It was an interview of a woman who was working at an election precinct. She had voted for her daughter, absentee ballot, but then her daughter forgot that her mother had actually turned her ballot in for her, and now she's voting at the poll, you know, double voting. You know, how can you – there's got to be – you know, I'm a firm believer. I'm not afraid to show my ID. I have nothing to hide. When I go vote and you want to see my driver's license and see my picture, I have no problem. My thing is, if you have a problem with it, I have to wonder, what do you got to hide, you know? I think that we would stop a lot of this corruption and voter fraud if we had voter ID mandatory all across the United States. I don't think it is a violation of anybody's constitutional rights. If anything, it protects us, because now we're having more of an opportunity to have, you know, a real vote counted, not a dead vote. No, one of these days, we've got to get Anita Moncrief on here, because, you know, there's just so many things that her eyes were opened up to when Acorn, you know, finally got exposed. And all they've done, Acorn just changed their name and they've gone underground. It's still happening. So, you know, it's time. 2014 is almost here. You know, we're just getting close to being, you know, the new year is going to be hitting us before you know it, just about to hit upon Christmas. And I know that the progressives are not stopping at anything. You know, we've got this debacle with Obamacare, and I never could, I'll never figure out why we have an administration who has at their disposal some of the most finest technological savvy people, and they got somebody who can't even build a good, solid website for this Affordable Health Care Act. Now I'm finding out that there's other people that are very, very talented that are going out and trying to build something very similar and are doing so much more. But, you know, when you talk about the HIPAA law that's out there, which means that, you know, your right to privacy, your medical records, you know, you sign up for this Obamacare, and my understanding is they're finding out that there's no secure site. Why would I want to go and sign up for something and have, you know, my information at risk of being tampered with? I don't want somebody data mining, you know, my information. That is mine to give up if I choose to, you know. I don't give out my Social Security number just to anybody. We already have enough problems with identity theft, you know. And I have to wonder sometimes, I think, if some of this data mining for the sole purpose of trying to pick and choose and determine who the progressive is and who the conservative is. And then they want to, it's like they're labeling us like they did back in World War II, so they could determine who the Jew was and who the German was. You know, there's we got a serious issue here. People need to wake up. Scott, back to you.
Well, and Jennifer and Dan, you know, the reason why we started this show was government overreach. We started this show because of Common Core. And we've got huge, we've been talking about a lot of overreach, and it's a mess. It really is a mess. You know, we could start with NSA, we could go to the IRS, we could go to the EPA, and a bunch of other letter agencies. But when they start messing with our kids, it gets personal. And right now, we're fighting hard against Common Core, and Common Core is falling. Common Core is falling the exact same way that the Equal Rights Amendment fell in the 70s. Because people don't like it. People don't like it on both sides of the aisle. But the purpose of Common Core, the real goal of Common Core, is to institutionalize some of the insanity that already goes on in our schools. They say it's to put everybody on a standard nationalized curriculum. Well, that's a bunch of bull crap. That's the biggest line I've heard in a long time, because we've already got that. Basically, you know, in the 8th grade, you started studying algebra. When you're in the 10th grade, you do geometry. When you're in the 5th grade, you learn about your state and your capital. When you're in the 8th grade, you learn the Constitution. When you're in kindergarten and 1st grade, you learn how to read. You learn how to add. In the 2nd grade, you start learning how to multiply. We've had a common set of curriculum for a long, long time in this country. So we know that it's not that. Common Core was designed to erode parental sovereignty. It was done in secret. And C-Scope is Common Core's little brother. It's his little cousin. And it was completed, so we know what's going to be in the curriculum. But it's designed to institutionalize a mentality, an ideology. And that's what's affecting Colorado today. That's what's affecting Colorado today. In a school, and I'm going to take a minute here in a moment and just read the article on this. But when you have a little sixth grade little boy, parents have got the right to raise that little boy in the manner in which they'd like to raise them. And I happen to think that it's not a real good idea to start talking about sex when you're dealing with a six-year-old. They're not old enough to quite understand it. But you got a school in Colorado that's decided to throw the word sexual harassment into his vocabulary, whether the parents like it or not, because he kissed not on the cheek, but kissed the hand of a little girl. He has kissed her on the cheek in the past, and it's been a situation, and I saw his interview. He was a rowdy little boy. Well, guess what? So was I. I was as rowdy as they came. I was ADD, and I don't like ADD or ADHD. I don't like those terms. I like the term hyperkinetic because that's what it really is. But I was hyper, and I was always into things. And, you know, my teachers loved me, and I had some things that I did when I was young. You know, when I was in the second grade, I picked a couple of packages off of the people's front porch, and I broke an antenna off a guy's car. And, yeah, and if you ever seen a camper, when you take a camper off the back of a pickup, it sits on hydraulic stands. And I took the butterfly nuts off of the two back hydraulic stands to a camper show that was sitting in somebody's driveway and watched it go down and lay down. I could have killed myself. Fall down and lay down on its back. I was curious. I wasn't a bad kid. I was a good-natured kid, but I was just curious, and I was always into something. And, you know, back in the day when I was in school, the teachers handled it. They dealt with it. And this little boy, he's hyper. You can tell, boy. During the interview, he has a hard time even sitting still. But he's smart. He's really, really smart. And, you know, the schools are supposed to, and we've had this conversation before Dan, before Jennifer, you know, these schools are supposed to be experts at dealing with early childhood development. They're supposed to be able to handle these situations. But it seems to me anymore, they've lost their way. They can't handle the situations anymore. And instead of dealing with it on an ongoing basis, you know, when you've got a hyper little kid, you just know that for years you're just going to have to deal with it. And you impose restrictions, you stay consistent, and when it gets in trouble, it gets in trouble. And so here's a little boy. He's decided that he's got a girlfriend, and he kissed her. And the little girl likes him. They're running around the school. They're boyfriend and girlfriend as far as they're concerned. And the school slaps in his record, suspending him, and slaps him in his record that he is guilty of sexual harassment. Now, that is insane. That is insane, Cannon School. Because, you know what, let me tell you something. Number one, it was overreach in the first place. It wasn't any responsibility for the school to decide that. And I wouldn't want six-year-olds running around kissing each other all the time, but there are ways of dealing with that. You just deal with it. It's been going on since the beginning of time. But I think there was something deeper there. I think there was a deeper ideology that wants to tell that little boy it's wrong to kiss little girls. And I think that same ideology, if he'd kissed a little boy, they would have been cheering. I think they would have been cheering. I know for good and well they wouldn't have suspended him for it. They would not have suspended him for that. And I want to read the article. It's in Breitbart. It's on their news. In fact, if you go to the this is even made the Associated Press. KRDO-TV, want to thank them in that area for following this and for reporting on it. We want to thank Matt Drudge and Breitbart and all these guys, but I want to read this. The suspension of a six-year-old boy for kissing a girl at school is raising questions about whether the peck should be considered sexual harassment. A boy's mother said officials at Lincoln School of Science and Technology in Cannon City, a southern Colorado city of 1,600, are overreacting. Jennifer Saunders said her son was suspended once before for kissing the girl and had other disciplinary problems, and she was surprised to find out that he would be forced out of school again for several days. I'm sorry about that. I lost it. I went too far. Scrolling down. The first grader, Hunter Yelton, told KRDO-TV that he has a crush on a girl at school and she likes him back. That's awesome. You know, that's awesome. You know, the little boys and little girls, they start growing up and they start liking to be friends. And, you know, that's sweet. That's sweet. It was during class. Yeah, we were doing reading group, and I leaned over and kissed her on the hand. That's what happened, he said. Saunders said that she saw nothing wrong with her son's display of affection. She said she punished him for other problems in school, including roughhousing. She was shocked when the school principal brought up the term sexual harassment during a meeting. This is taking it to an extreme that doesn't need to be met with a six-year-old. Now my son is asking questions. What is sex, Mommy? That should not ever be said, sex, not in a sentence with a six-year-old. Amen, Mom. Amen. District Superintendent Robin Goldie, told the Associated Press on Tuesday the boy was suspended because of a policy against unwanted touching. The focus needs to be on his behavior. We usually try to get the student to stop, but if it continues, we need to take action, and it sometimes flows right into the level of suspension, he said. Bullcrap. Bullcrap, Superintendent. What you just told me was that you were weak. What you told me was in decades past when teachers all over the country, this is nothing new, this has gone on in probably every single class over the decades, every single class, and it's amazing that it hasn't had to rise to this occasion. But the fact that it had to rise to this occasion just tells me that you are weak and you cannot handle situations in your school, and I'm with you, Dan Wilson, he needs to be fired. He said officials have not heard from the girl's parents and no legal action is anticipated because it was only a violation of school policy. Why is he even bringing up legal action? Oh, boy, if he thinks he wants to get it going, I dare him. I dare you, Superintendent. You just bring some legal action into this. You think you got it bad right now? Your little town of 1600 right now is being in chaos. I know because I called the school, and I heard the tone of voice from the woman that answered the phone, and she was almost in tears. And bless her heart, she didn't have anything to do with this. She didn't make this decision, but she's having to deal with all of it. In recent years, Colorado and other states have been moving to relax zero-tolerance disciplinary policies, blamed for increasing dropout rate and giving students criminal records for relatively minor infractions. However, those policies have dealt mostly with safety issues such as students fighting or bringing a replica gun to school, not sexual harassment. Dr. David Welsh, a school psychologist, said some policies that bar bullying, harassment, and weapons on public school campuses may go too far, but school boards are being forced to develop strict policies and follow them to the letter because of the large number of complaints being reported by students and teachers who face consequences if they keep silent. Well, I'm sorry, folks. That's because of the mentality of the left that's causing that. That's not the blame on the students and the teachers. If you have a policy and a procedure and you don't follow it, it's hard to defend, Welsh said. The boy's suspension ended on Tuesday. School officials refused to say if he was back in class, and his mother did not return a phone call seeking comment. A child psychologist told KRDO that tough love in this case could have negative consequences. She said kissing is normal behavior for children that age. You know, I went running around, you know, Jennifer, you'll laugh at this. You know me. I went running around the whole second grade. Chasing Grace Ye. I have to look her up, see if I can find her on Facebook. A little Chinese girl that I was close friends with. And she ran for me and ran for me and ran for me, but we were friends. Second grade. It was normal behavior. For most six-year-old boys, absolutely, that would be normal behavior, said Sandy Wordley, a school clinical psychologist who specializes in child sexual development and the prevention of childhood sexual abuse. Worley said she was surprised to hear the school suspended him. That really gives mixed messages, negative messages to the kids, she said. This part of development is just as important, if not more, than the academic subjects. Worley said children at that age are just simply curious about the differences between boys and girls. You know what's stupid, and you know, Dan, you know me, Jennifer, you know me, this is where I'm going to rant, and this is where I'm going to talk tough. Because I'm going to tell you, this nonsense got to quit. Because what you did was you took something that was very, very innocent, and you put it on the level of if that kid had walked up to another kid and socked him in the gut. That's what you suspend kids for. And I'm going to use this illustration, and I'm going to say it again, and I'm going to say it again, and I'm going to say it again. When you cannot handle your disciplinary problems without going to this kind of extreme, it proves you're weak. Here's my illustration. And we know because I sent this link, I know that there's probably, hopefully, some people listening from that school, and I'm going to tell you the way it is. Hopefully, Principal Tammy, you're listening right now, and I'm going to tell you the way it is. You're a principal. You understand this concept. First-year teacher. A first-year teacher has a real hard time learning because they're brand new. They're learning about how to discipline in the class. They have to learn consistency. I've been there. I've been a first-year teacher. I taught junior high 2 years. I've taught all my life in one capacity or another. Right now I'm teaching a bunch of little old ladies, and there's no discipline problem whatsoever in ladies' Bible class Friday here on Contending for Truth Radio. But a brand new teacher goes in, and they struggle. And while they're weak, while they're still learning, here's what they do. When they have too many problems, they start sending the kids to the principal's office because they can't handle the situation in-house. When you've got a school has gotten to a point where they've got to suspend for something so minor as this, it shows you're just as weak as that first-year teacher. You don't know how to handle your discipline problems. Is this a problem? And I'll say it just like Jared Markham and some of the other stories that we've covered concerning parental sovereignty and like this. Yeah, I don't want little kids just kissing each other all day in school. And, yeah, it's a situation where you got to sit down and say, no, no, you can't do that. But, man, when you have to suspend a kid for something like this, it's weakness. It isn't strength. And to even bring up the concept of legal action tells me that you don't have a handle on your problems. You don't have the ability to control these kids. You don't have the ability to do the discipline that you need. You don't know how to handle your job. You need to find something else. Go to work flipping McDonald's burgers. Go to work for Walmart as a greeter. Our kids. These are not your kids, Miss Tammy. These are not your kids, Tammy. They're not your kids, Tammy. These are the kids belong to the parents. And you are there to teach them how to read and write. You are there to teach them history and math. And you guys are failing at that. I would love to know in the Lincoln School how many kids are going through there and they don't know how to read. Why don't they know how to read? Because you're too busy sticking your nose where it doesn't belong. I got a four-year-old here that is not even yet five, and she's reading at a second-grade reading level. And I did it with a dry erase marker and the refrigerator. Yet the public schools have got our kids for 60,000 hours over a period of 12, 13 years. And still, what is it, 20%? I've forgotten what the percentage is. 20%, 30% of the illiterate in this country have gone through the public school system. And it's not the school. It's the people in the school. It's the people that are concentrating on stuff like this. It's the people that are concentrating more on a kid's T-shirt because it says NRA than they are concentrating on educating our students. Shame on you. Shame on you, Lincoln School. Shame on you. I'm going to say it one more time, just in case you didn't hear me. Shame on you. Bad administration. Weak administration. And you guys know me. I don't like to use foul language, but I'm going to say this. You guys have shown your ass. This is insane. Not only is it insane because of everything else, but it is insane that now a set of parents has to try and explain to a six-year-old little boy what sex is, what sexual harassment is. It baffles me. Dan, it baffles me that there's not any more common sense in a school teacher, in a principal, in an administrator to know better than this. Now, I'll tell you what I would do, Dan. I'll tell you what I would do, and this is why they don't let me be the god of everything. I would take that administrator that made that decision, and I would take them out to the middle of the city square of that little 1600 town, and I would bend them over my knee, I would bare their butt, and I would take my belt to it. And if you did that a couple of times in this country, maybe, just maybe, somebody might think twice before they did this again. But I believe this is a spankable offense. I think it is a spankable offense for an educator to throw the word sexual harassment at a six-year-old little boy when the parents haven't decided that they're going to explain that to that child yet. This is serious, folks. And I'm going to tell you, look them up. You can find them on the Internet. I don't have the number right in front of me. I should have written it down. But give them a call. They're on the Internet. I called them. I called the administration. Give them a call. Tell them tomorrow exactly how you feel, folks, because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take it every time that this happens, just like it did with Jared Markham. It took a bunch of phone calls. It took a bunch of people. It took a rally on the front steps of the porch. The Lincoln School of Science and Technology in Cannon City, Colorado. Look them up on the Internet and call them. and tell them this is not acceptable. People there in Camden City, I'm going to tell you, you guys need to be en masse in that principal's office tomorrow. You need to be en masse in that principal's office tomorrow saying this is unacceptable. This is not your right. You have crossed the line. You have gone over the bound. You know the word sin. You know what it means? It means crossing the line. It means you've crossed the boundary of where you were supposed to go. You've broken the rule. You guys have broken the rule. You don't have the right to step over the line that you stepped over. Now, before I get any more irate, I'm going to pass it on down to Jennifer Montrose, and then, Jennifer, I'll let you pass it to Dan.
Well, you know, this is what's crazy to me. Okay, so a boy in California goes to school that day and decides that he's got his feminine side and he can walk into a woman's bathroom, a lady's bathroom, and go to potty. Yet a little boy may be, you know, fascinated with a little girl and is role-playing and decides to do the Fred Astaire thing and kiss the little girl on the hand, and that's considered sexual harassment. Somewhere, somebody has got a screw loose. You know, brain full of marbles. Because I remember as a kid, I mean, we used to take cardboard boxes and make post office out of it. You know, all kinds of things that we would do with those cardboard boxes, make lemonade stands. But we were role-playing as kids. You know, that's all a part of this developmental stage of life, you know. But what Common Core is doing to our children, it is stripping them of their imagination. Let's have you so, you know, fine-tuned and trained to be just like robots so that when you get older, then you will do what big government, what the big guy says that you have to do. So when we tell you, when government says, it's time to hop on that train. We go down that track. You got to obey the orders. You know, what are they doing? You know, trying to strip us of our gun rights. So what do they do? They make it difficult for us to get ammunition. I am a citizen of the United States. I have a right to protect my property, to protect my kids. Yeah, this is just so crazy. I don't get it. You know, The things that go on in today's classroom, and I understand that there are teachers that are afraid to come out. I challenge any teacher out there who sees this stuff going on a daily basis, that is tired of seeing what they do see, afraid of losing their job. Maybe they're willing to come out finally and take a stand and speak out about this kind of stuff. Come on the show. We would love to have you. You know, there's just so many things that are so wrong with today's society. I understand that, you know, people live a certain way. They have a certain lifestyle. That is their choice. But as a child, you know, there's just some things. I mean, you know, I read an article where they were talking about, you know, the Muslim family wanted their child to have the right to pray, you know, every day, all day throughout periodic times in the school classroom. So they're considering allowing that to take place because they don't want to offend, you know, his religious rights. Yet, if another child wants to, in the school lunchroom, wants to pray to Jesus Christ, they have a problem with it because, you know, heaven forbid that we might offend them too. Now they're talking about, one school was talking about wanting to do away with the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, at the beginning of classroom, as you remember, those of you who remember it well, I know I did, I'm 50, when we would stand to attention and salute the flag, hand over heart, and say the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, how much time does that really take away from your day to be able to effectively do what you need to do throughout the day in class? you know, if anything, I would think that that would be something that would be so important that you would want to pay respects to the flag, to the Constitution, you know, and in remembrance of our founding fathers who fought so hard for us to have the freedom that we have today. You know, I just, it's, things are gotten so out of control. But we have the progressives. They're in the media. They're on news. We've got progressives that have an R by their political name and those that have a D by their political name. I think that sometimes it's hard, the political distinction that we have today's society. You know, if you respect the Constitution, you respect life, you have belief in limited government, belief in personal responsibility, you know, those are the things that I look for. I just, the times that I remember, and I'll speak about this again, in 1976, I remember the bicentennial year. I remember being proud to the play that we had that year. People were representing the characters of our forefathers. Now they're wanting to totally rewrite history, take pieces and parts of it out. You know, and I'm like, why? What's the deal? You know, what's this? What makes no sense to me. You know, there's things that have got to take place. We've got to do our due diligence. If we do not take more close attention, we're going to be waking up one day screaming, they lied to us, what happened? I didn't know this was taking place, you know. Scott, I'll turn it over to Dan. Go ahead. Turn it over to Dan.
Okay, thanks, Jennifer. And I just wanted to send my condolences over to you. I watched the Alabama-Auburn game, and I was just as shocked as you were. And, well, that's college football for you.
I'm an Alabama fan, but I will tell you that I was really proud to see that we kept it in the South.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And, you know, it shocked the heck out of me, too. But, and as I said, that's the way college ball goes. And as for, you know, what happened with this six-year-old boy, this is a manifestation of a much larger problem. What this administration has done has been to follow the progressive movement. And the followers, the superintendent and principal, they're essentially cowards. They're people that hide. I mean, I called today the school, and I had to talk to that poor secretary. And the woman was sweet as can be, you know. And I asked her, you know, I said, what do you think? And she goes, well, I don't know enough about it. And I said, there's not anything to know anything about. This is a six-year-old child. When I was six years old, I didn't even know what sex was. Nor do I think that little boy knew what sex is. It was an experiment, you know, during the development of a child from, you know, the day they're born, they're always experimenting. And this little boy and this little girl were experimenting. Nothing else, and you know, it wasn't anything dirty about it. And if we look back at things like Valentine's cards back in the 40s, you'll see little pictures. There were little drawings of little boys and little girls, and the little boy we were kissing the little girl on the cheek, and she'd have little red on either side, and we thought it was cute.
You know, Paul Andrew called it Puppy Love, you know, and he sang about it. You know, there was nothing wrong about it. And this principal who shows her inability to take care of a simple situation and makes it into something it totally isn't. And then she is incapable of making a decision on her own, so she passes the buck up to the superintendent, who is also weak and doesn't have the ability to make a decision on his own. So what do? They create a problem. It's a tactic of the progressive movement is to, one thing, is to change the direction of thought to some another area and to create what they're trying to achieve. And I left, and I'll say it on the air, I left my phone number to the superintendent, and I dare him to call me. Not because I'm going to do anything, you know. I want to talk to him and tell him that he needs to find a new job, because obviously the one he was posted in, he doesn't have the ability to do. He's a person of weak stature, and as far as I'm concerned, he should go to work digging ditches, because he'd be better suited at that. He's not a leader. He's not a man. He's a coward. To pick on a six-year-old child, you're a coward. And, you know, I'm saying the same thing to the principal. You're a coward and you need to go to work somewhere else, because obviously you cannot handle your own job. And, you know, as I said earlier, this is a manifestation of a larger problem. And then we look up to this, because if you follow this, it goes right up to the highest of offices. This administration has attempted to attack our Constitution on 9 separate occasions, where the Supreme Court had to step in and say, no, you've gone too far. And that's a liberal group. You know, when the U.S. Supreme Court today tells a Democratic president he's gone too far, he's gone too far. You know, our Constitution, the Common Core is trying to attack our amendments. You know, 2 amendments they want to get rid of. They're gone too far. They tell, you know, the left is starting to use this tactic now of saying that our Constitution is out of date. Well, let me take you over to Europe, where you go, you know, how you people want us to be like the Europeans. Well, there was a little charter that was passed 800 years ago, and it was called the Magna Carta. And you don't hear people over in England saying it's out of date, even though that Magna Carta goes back to 1200. It's 800 years old. And they don't say it's out of date, because it isn't. What was put down in the Magna Carta were basic human rights. If you look at our Constitution, it's basic human rights. And there's some safeguards in our Constitution that to ensure that. The Second Amendment. The left likes to make it look like, you know, these are for warmongers, and anybody who wants a gun is for a warmonger. Well, you know, take a look at the Second Amendment. It's not about war or anything like that. It's about protecting your own rights. It's about protecting your town. I mean, it's not about anything. You know, they're making it, they don't understand that they're taking something and blowing it totally out of context. It's ridiculous. You know, if you look at the Second Amendment, it doesn't start out with, you know, I have the right to own guns. It says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the bear arms shall not be infringed. There are two laws on board that go back, that are still in existence, that the Supreme Court decided on, that says that the Supreme Court, that the government does not have the right to even tell us what type of weapons to own, because it's set up for a militia. In other words, what's good in the U.S. Army should be attainable to the general public, because it's the first part of this first Second Amendment states a regulated militia. And the left likes to take and use the regulated part and say, look, you know, that means I have to, there's laws we have to pass to contain this. No, if you look back at how they said things back in 1778, regulated means well-trained. Nothing else, nothing, and that's it. You know, so they don't even have the legal right under the Supreme Court to tell us what type of weapons. So what do? They put piggyback laws on it. Again, a total violation of the Constitution. And what we need to do is, first, we need to educate people on what the Constitution is and what it stands for and what the specific amendments say. We have laws that are being totally ignored. There was something called the Miranda Right Act. It's no longer applicable, because anything you say from the time an officer comes up to you, and as soon as you open your mouth, every word can be used in court against you. Now, if you choose to not comment on anything, then they get you with another, they slap you with another one. If they say you don't say anything, they say that means you're guilty. So you're damned if you talk, if you say anything, and you're damned if you do say anything. They got you around the barrel. And this is common practice today. And it shows that the judges and the legislators are taking it to a point where they are removing our rights completely, and they are taking over. And if they want you in jail, they want to lock you up, they don't have to have any reason to do so, they just do it. And there's not a damn thing you can do about it. We need to stand up against this tyranny. We need to stop this. Every time we see acts like this from the school board on up, we need to put an end to it. I totally want everybody who's in our listening audience tonight to call that school, call that school district and leave a message and basically bombard them with phone calls. Let them know this is not tolerable. We are not going to take it anymore.
You have awakened the sleeping giant, and this is only the beginning. It's time that we're taking a stand here. It's time that we stop this nonsense, and it's time that we stand up and start making action. We can no longer sit around and be complacent anymore. We can no longer sit around and expect somebody else to do it or say that, oh, we're only one person. We can't solve it. Well, if you look at our little group here, our little family, our little extended family here on the radio, is each and every one of us took that step by ourselves because we saw it needed to, the change needed to happen. You know, Jennifer, you know, you went out and started, now you're up on the Republican Party, you've gone to Washington, and you made a difference. And Scott, you know, with the radio program here and your other five programs, you're making a difference because you're reaching out to people. Rodney is out there living in a shed for a week and a half, almost 2 weeks, and he's making a difference. He's changing people's lives. We can do it if we get together, if everybody gets together. There was a wonderful little saying in the newest Robin Hood movie, which surprised the heck out of me. And he's in front of all the townspeople, and the king is being a tyrant over all the peasants. And Robin Hood says, he goes, you don't start building a castle from the top. He said, you start at the foundation and you build it up from there. And that's exactly what we have to do. We have to take that as those very same words and look at it that way. Is the top is out of control. So where are we going to make the change? We got to start down here, right where your feet hit the grass, and go around and spread the word with every single person you see. And you go to your local school board meetings. You go to your town hall meetings. And you tell them, you know, we aren't going to take this anymore. And if everybody does that, if everybody in our listening audience does that and then tells a friend of theirs the same thing and get people involved here on the local basis, the government doesn't have a chance against us because we can start bringing in politicians. We got too many politicians already. I think it's about time we got rid of the politicians and started putting patriots in there. People who are out there, not because they have an ego the size of Manhattan, but people who care for their country, people who want to give of themselves, you know, like Scott, like what you've done, and what I've done, and what Jennifer's done, and Rodney, and Stacy, and, you know, and, of course, Dee and Kimmy, you know, these are wonderful everyday people, just like you and I. They're no different than anybody out there in the listening audience. But you know something? They were so frightened and saw what was happening to this great nation of ours. You know, and they took the initiative. I remember Kimmy and I were sitting on the cane train together, and Dee was there, and we're all, you know, rallying behind Herman Cain. And then Herman Cain got off the train. Well, he kind of took another train, and we just remained on his, and we've been going ever since. And I remember when Kim first started out talking about her rally, and we were like, wow, I was thinking, man, this is, you know, talk about an undertaking. And you know, at the last minute, you know, she hadn't reached her goal, and we're sitting there going, geez, Sim, what can we do? You know, we all rallied around her. And, you know, she made it happen. And now it's in the second year, and she's taking it one step further. She's, you know, she's creating a program that will help fund conservative grassroots people who are going for public office. Now, if that is not a wonderful thing, and it shows you what one person can do, it shows you that one person can make a difference. And then you have, you know, her boyfriend, Dee. Dee is, I can't say enough for Dee. I mean, talk about salt of the earth. And what is he doing? He's bringing back patriotism, love for country. It's something we lost. And he's bringing back God back into the program. Again, something we chased God and put him off to the side and made him a dirty word. And what did we do? We allowed a false God to be put in his place. And we said it's okay for them. But we can't even, I mean, I've been watching TV commercials, and Santa Claus is now saying happy holidays. What is wrong with this? And everybody out there say Merry Christmas. Because you know something? This is the origins of our country. Our country was founded on the Judeo-Christian belief. And if anybody doesn't like that, sorry. That is the origins, that's the foundation, that's the cornerstone stone of our nation. And don't try to remove it. And to the president, how dare you do that? How dare you remove God? I mean, I pray every day that by the time we win back our government, we start getting some true patriots in there, that we can remove the top echelon of this government. And I pray to God that we have the strength to follow up and bring them up on high treason, because that's what they deserve. And I've ranted out enough right now. So, Scott, I'll pass it back over to you.
Yeah, and both of you, exactly. You know, and then you went on a little bit of a rant about people doing things. And I want to take the time, we move on, and we're going to head up and close the show out, try and do it before the hour is out. But you know, we got some great candidates out there that are doing things. And I want to talk about one real quick, a smaller candidate that I'm following and trying to give support to, trying to give a shoulder. You know, a lot of times what I'm able to do is give a big shoulder. I'm not always able to get out in the car and go down and pass out signs, or I'm not always able to hand over money. But I can be an encourager and a shoulder. And there's a candidate, and he's been on this show. His name is Dave Souza. And he's running for the planning commissioner, I believe it's the planning commissioner, El Dorado Planning Commission, up in El Dorado County near Sacramento. And this is what I'm talking about, folks. This is what I'm talking about. Dave's a horseman. In fact, if you go to his Facebook page, he met Ronald Reagan as a kid in a parade up in Coloma, which is part of the Gold Rush country here in California, where the James Marshall statue is. And he shook his hand as a kid when Ronald Reagan was running for governor in this great state. And he spent his life since then, really, like you and I, Dan and Jennifer, appreciating Reagan for who he was and the character. And Dave Souza is a horseman, and he lives up. And he's got 150 acres. He's got cows and he's got horses and he's got bears and bobcats and everything else, deer up there. And he's an outdoorsman. He's a cowboy. Got a hat, big old hat, and his big old mustache, and he's a good man. Well, today somebody brought it to his attention that there were four cows that were out and loose, and they needed to find out where they went. And, you know, most people wouldn't have taken their time out of the day. I live across the street from cows. I see cows out on the road every once in a while, and I know who to call, and I call. There's a one number for those cows, and Eric calls, hey, he's got a cow out. But most people would just walk by and go, okay, there's some cows that are out. But Dave took his time out of the day to post on Facebook and say, hey, there's four cows out here at the corner of highway this and the corner of highway that. And he brought some discussion, and they, oh, do you think that this person's? No, I tried that. Do you think that this person? No, I tried that. He says, the guy that told me about them and said they're acting a little hungry. I'm going to bring some hay up there. I'm going to bring a bale of hay up there. And Dave spent the day. In fact, I think Dave ended up even having to take off in his Jeep and even go look for the cows, and he put some effort into it. When I was in the 90s, I worked for World Book Encyclopedia, and we had a little book called Little Things Make a Big Difference. We passed it out to parents with young children, and it was just little things that you could do to make a difference. Well, that's a little thing that Dave did today that made a big difference. And I'll tell you, it brought a tear to my eye because it's character. Dave didn't have to do that. Dave didn't have to take time out of his busy day. He's a busy day. He's got his ranch that he's got to take care of every day. I imagine Dave gets up real early in the morning and goes to bed at night. He's got all kinds of things to take care of. He's running this campaign. He's got a busy day, but he took his day out, time of his day out. So not only trying to help get these cows home, but to also make sure that they had a bale of hay in case they were hungry. And that's what I'm talking about. That's what we need in government. We need character like that. You know, I would be willing to say that 99% on both sides, this is not a Republican problem, this is not a Democrat problem, 99% of what's in Washington D.C. on both sides would have never even given it a second thought. This is the kind of character we need. We're going to have Dave on the show here pretty soon, most likely after I get to Texas. In about 3 weeks, I should be in Texas. My sister's working on a great place. We're hoping we're going to get it. It's on an acre piece of property. As soon as we get Studio Contending for Truth Radio down there in Texas, we'll get him on after the first of the year, and we're going to have a great discussion with him. He's a great guy. I've gotten to know him. He's a great guy. Matt Jenkins, there where you're at, in Alabama, running for Congress. Jennifer, Jonathan Barney. Oh, man, Jonathan's a great guy. I have extreme respect for Jonathan Barney. We got some great candidates, folks. They're willing to get in and make a difference. I know when Matt wins his race, and I know when Jonathan wins his race, they're going to make a difference because they got character. They got good character. Out here in California, boy, I'm getting to know a candidate down in the 8th District here in California, Rodney Lee Conover. Let me tell you, he is out of all the races the one I'm looking forward to over the next 12. We got about 12 months before we get to 11 months. I'm looking forward to it because he's going to be a lot of fun. This guy is crazy, let me tell you. He's fun.
Oh, I love Rodney.
I'm going to tell you, he knows how to put the message out on abortion. That's his newest link on his campaign website. Jennifer, you want to go check that out? You're going to love exactly the way he says what he says. Fighting common Dave Souza, you know, Dave's running this little county race. Boy, Dave Souza, he's out there fighting Common Core. Rodney's fighting Common Core. He's right, fighting Obamacare. He's fighting for our Second Amendment rights. And I'm going to tell you, Rodney and I have gotten close over the last couple of weeks. We chat back and forth each day, and we're going to have him again. We're going to have him a number of times on the show, I am sure. I'm going to be on the phone with him tomorrow for a couple of hours, and we're going to talk about the cane train. He's interested in finding out exactly how the cane train went. And so, you know, Jennifer, you know me well enough to know that conversation is going to take about 2 hours to talk about Team Cane and cost and business cards and cane train convoys and all of the things that went on with the Herman Cain campaign and our connection and network. I told Rodney, I said, you know, Herman Cain even though he didn't really realize it, I think, had as powerful of a grassroots as what's his name, the tinfoil guy, Ron Paul, but a stronger and more vital connections and a more powerful team. And we're going to, over this next few months, we're going to start putting together teams for these guys. We're going to start putting together networks of people that can help them get out and raise money. Got to put the team together first. Jennifer Montrose is helping Matt put together his team. We got a group going already. We're going to start putting together a team for Rodney Conover. We've already got a team going for Dave Souza. He's got some good people up there in El Dorado County helping him out. We're going to win this, guys. We have to win this. Because I'm tired of six-year-old little boys being thrown the term sexual harassment at them. And the only way we're going to win that is to win it from the top to the bottom. We need to be in the executive office of the White House. We need new blood. We need people with the character, the same kind of character that Dave Souza's got. The same kind of character that is willing to take time out of their day to help somebody else, and even though it messes up their busy schedule. We need that kind of character. We need the kind of character of these candidates. And we're going to do that. I'm going to tell you, I think we got the wind at our backs. The president's approval rating has fallen through the floor. Forbes is forecasting in January they're going to repeal Obamacare. My connections that I've got with different congressmen across the country, I don't have a whole lot of connections, but I got a few. I'll tell you what I'm hearing. I'm hearing from every single one of them that they really believe within another few weeks they will have the votes in the Senate for a full repeal of Obamacare. I think it's going down, folks. I think Common Core is going to go down this year. I'll tell you, they're even pushing it over in California, North Carolina. You guys out down there in Alabama are pushing it over. Florida, Dan, you got people down there that are trying to pretend they're pushing it over, I think. But the grassroots down there in Florida are working hard to push it over.
Yeah, we
this
are.
Isn't the country, this is not the country that we built. This is not the country that our founding fathers built. To do these things, to let the federal government micromanage every little aspect of our lives. This isn't the way it works. Folks, we're going to do this. Gabby Saucedo Mercer in Arizona that we had on the show a few weeks back, man, we're going to make sure she wins. Because you want to talk about somebody that understands immigration, she's a legal immigrant. And she came here because she saw what the other side's team likes to play. She doesn't like it. She moved here because of freedom. She became a United States citizen because of freedom. We're going to keep that freedom, and we're going to keep on keeping on. I'm going to pass it back to Jennifer for last remarks, and I'll let you pass it to Dan for last remarks, and we will go ahead and close out the show. It looks like we're going to end the stream. I'm not going to ask people to go ahead and call in. We'll just let this go on into archive. But Jennifer, you guys And we're going to get them in there. I love it because they say that the Alabama Southern is not winnable. And that just tells me it's time to do it because they told me, as I read and I looked in my history, they told me in my history that Frederick Douglass would never amount to anything because he was born a slave. But we know how that turned out, don't we, Jennifer?
Yes, we do. The owner, self-taught, owner of three newspaper companies, advisor to five U.S. presidents, and today we say, by today's standards, to run for Congress, you need a college degree, you've got to have all these things. And I'm sorry, but some of the people that we have running office now, talk about Nancy Pelosi. She needs to go home. She needs to go sit down. We've got people in office that are puppets that are doing just what other people tell them to do. They're just like they've got marionette strings and somebody else is controlling them. And people on both sides of the aisle, if you don't do anything to mess me up, we got a situation going on down here in Alabama with the Speaker of the House, Mike Hubbard. He's up on some major charges, misappropriations of funds, you know, and my understanding is that some of the Republicans have said, oh, no, we don't want to call him out on any of this stuff that he's done because it'll make the Speaker of the House that, you know, for Alabama, it'll make it look bad in the public eye. We don't want to bring any of that kind of negative attention on Alabama, you know, but my thing is that if they're not standing up for constitutional values, principles, then they got to go. If they're not doing the things according to what we have set up as far as, you know, rules and law and that sort of thing, to the Constitution, then it's time to go. It's time to go. You know, I have had enough. We have, it's rhino hunt season in 2014. That's all I can tell you. We're going to be taking back the Senate, you know, and the House. We got to just do our due diligence. And I am really, really concerned. You know, we've got a candidate running in District 4 out in Nevada, out in Las Vegas, Nidra Ennis. Great guy, solid conservative. And the minute that he even hinted that he was going to run, the progressives were already out there doing their due diligence to raise funds and to start getting all of their, you know, manpower together to defeat this guy. Because he's a black conservative, standing up for the Constitution, really good, solid conservative, you know, good, solid, you know, principle, constitutional man, you know, I would say that knowing Nigel like I do, that he espouses to the same for life empowering values that Frederick Douglass did, and I know that Douglass would be just as proud to stand alongside him as well. You know, I believe that we have a nation that has been hoodwinked. They've been lied to. You know, the Democratic Party's website says for 200 years we have been champions of civil rights. What was going on 200 years ago? And who was the one that was fighting to keep slavery alive in America? You know, ask yourself those questions. And, you know, people say that, you know, it's just we've got to start putting people in principle over a party in politics. You know, there's things that need to take place. We've got too much voter fraud happening in America. We have too many good, qualified candidates. We've got people out there that say, well, if you can't show me the money and raise $4 million, then that tells me that you don't have what it takes to be able to win to get into office. You know, and some of it I think is that we have people that are just rolling each other under the bus. Everybody's all interested in wanting to gain power and control. And we know what happens when you have one world dictatorship. We've seen it. You can look at the history books, watch the video footage, the reel-to-reel movies of what happened in World War II. You know, if you don't want to see that same thing happen again in today's, you know, with today's economy the way it is and technology and all that stuff, it'll come again with a new face, but it's got the same inside, the same mentality, the same heart, heartless, you know, and we've got to fight. We've got to fight that fight. You know, if you want to get involved, you know, find a candidate in your area that you really, really get to know who they are. Don't just look at a man or a woman and say, because he's a Democrat, I'm going to vote for him. Find out what he stands for, he or she, what they stand for. If you go to church on Sunday and you say that it is wrong to kill a baby, if you talk about what Scripture says about things that go, that, and you go vote for somebody who stands up for something that's against what you believe in, You know, vote your values is what I say, you know. And it's time that we stop being puppets. You know, we've got to get out there and get ourselves educated on the issues. There is some things that need to take place in 2014. If we keep doing what we've always done, we're going to keep getting what we've always gotten. And it's time that we stop the insanity. We've got to get educated and move forward. You know, that is what Frederick Douglass was fighting for. You know, he politically agitated Lincoln long enough to help get this man to think. You know, what is it about slavery that's wrong? He made Lincoln think, and then once he got elected into office, he did his due diligence to hold his feet to the fire. And that's what we as Americans have got to do. You may say one thing when you're out there on the campaign trail and do something totally different when you get in the House and go vote. And it's time that we do our due diligence and hold people's feet to the fire. You know, bless Ted Cruz's heart for what he is doing. Rand Paul is doing the same thing. Senator Mike Lee is doing the same thing. We've got so many out there that are trying to fight for our liberties and our freedom. But we have too many people in the progressive media, you know, that get out there and just tell bold-faced lies, and people will believe them because they've just been brainwashed to think, oh, because it's coming from this one particular news source, then it's got to be true. You know, there was a lot of propaganda that was surrounded when they were creating the movie The Titanic. There's so many things that were going on back then, and it's time that we take a stand. Scott?
Mm-hmm. Go for it, Dan.
No, I agree with you, Jennifer. First of all, I want to start off by, in our closing remarks, to really thank Herman Cain for bringing us all together. Jennifer, you and I met on the train. Scott, you were on the train, and it was it's Herman Cain's that really brought us into the political spotlight, and we learned a lot along the way, and I praise God for that. And as for what's going on, you know, here in Florida, yeah, we're kind of a little bit behind this, behind the eight ball right now, but we have some wonderful candidates still here. I'm sure that Alan West can win back his seat in Congress. He's one of the greatest. He's a great patriot and a person I want to support all the way. And we have some great patriots out there in our government. But their hands are tied. They can't do anything. And it's up to us to give them the support that they need. We need to get out there, and we need to spread the word verbally, just like they did 250 years ago. You know, it started out with a small group of patriots who said, enough is enough, you know, against the what was going on with their government. And people think that we were not under any political rule when we first started this nation. No, we were part of Britain. We were still under the authority of the crown. But one day we sat there and said, enough is enough. And it started out real simple with the British trying to overtax us. And they put up blockages, so they put up barricades so they couldn't bring in shipping. And we figured a way out around it by making small draft boats that would go up the coast and it will go right around their blockades. And the British followed one boat, and it was called the Gatsby, and it followed the boat, the Katy. And the Katy intentionally led them to get the Gatsby to run aground. And that was the very beginning of the Revolutionary War. It's not written and covered very much in the history books, but it's a group of grassroots people, townspeople, who got together and said, hey, enough is enough here, buddy. And they put down their feet. We need to put down our feet. We need to stop this. Governor Scott is finding out the hard way that the grassroots movement inside the state of Florida is much stronger than he thought. He was listening too much to Miami and Fort Lauderdale. That's a small group of people. Because actually, past holiday, and if you go down into the Keys, you're right back into the conservative movement. They're conservatives down there in the furthest south part of the state. And, I mean, Key West is such that they actually said they were seceding from the Union because of over-regulation. And for a four-month period, they put up actually barricades, and they called themselves the Conk Republic. Now, this is the American spirit. This is what true Americans are. You know, we aren't going to let ourselves be pushed around anymore. And you can see it. Little by little, our efforts are starting to pay off. And what I propose to everybody out there who's listening to us, join in with us. You can make a difference. I mean, it's whatever way, I mean, put in whatever you can. Not all of us can get out there on the streets and things like that. You know, for instance, I can't do that. I have health issues that prevent me from doing a heck of a lot. But here I can, you know, help support you people, the people that can get out there in the streets. Get out there and volunteer for, you know, your local voting district during the elections to help prevent voter fraud. Make sure that we hold people accountable. Make sure that, you know, here in Florida, we have to show our IDs before we can vote. And I'm proud to show, well, not my picture, but... I have no problem showing my ID because every person who is legal in this country can obtain an ID with little effort. All they have to do is show a Social Security card and a birth certificate and then get an identification. It's not a difficult thing. If you want to go to a bar and you're young, you have to show an ID to get in. I mean, if you want to buy a pack of cigarettes, you need to show an ID. So if you need to show an ID for simple things like that, what's the big deal about showing an ID to vote? And again, this is just an attempt by the progressive movement to hide their lies and to hide their under, you know, their misdoing, their misdeeds, because they want to commit voter fraud. That's what Acorn's out there for. That's what, you know, and Obama is supporting this. So we need to put an end to this crap. And if we have to go back to paper ballots, I'm all for it. Where you see an actual signature, and if you know, then you have a paper trail. so you can prove it. And dead people have a little difficulty in the writing department. So it would be actually a paper ballot would make it more difficult to commit voter fraud. And if you see Jane Doe voted six times, you can show that, you know, you can prove that too. So I'm almost for just saying, let's go back to paper ballots and hell with it. And what I challenge all of you in the coming year is join in with us. Go out there and do something. Make phone calls. You know, there's nothing else you can do. You know, call Colorado and tell them you're sick and tired of this crap and we're not going to take it anymore. Call your local, your school board, or you see something, some constitutional violation, stand up against it. You wouldn't believe how good it feels when all of a sudden you awaken that patriot from within and the gratification you get because you're saving a great nation. If you look at what this nation has done in 250 years, it changed the world. I mean, for years, right up until the progressives started winning out, we were the envy of the entire world. And people were striving to be like us. We were the example. We were the guiding light, the pinnacle of the world. And we led not by tyranny. We led by example. You know, Charles de Gaulle tried to throw us out of France. And I forgot who said this, but the guy, you know, de Gaulle was going how terrible we were and how France would be better off without us, and every American should be thrown out of France. And the individual said, does that mean that we have to remove all the Americans that are buried over in your country? The 100,000 people that died saving your nation? And De Gaulle sat down and couldn't say a word. You know, we're a great nation. We're a proud nation. We have done things. We have, you know, we have been accused of trying to take over the world. Well, show me where there's one, other than American cemeteries, where we took any land, where we attempted to take over any nation. Nobody can say anything because we never have. What we've done is when these people have been in trouble, we have sacrificed and we have put our people in harm's way. They paid the ultimate price to save these people, to save the French. You know, we have bailed out France not once, but twice. And then they have the gall to tell us how bad we are. You know, we have people, the kids in Belgium are saying how bad America is. Well, let me bring back, they have a little town in Belgium called Bastogne. Well, guess who liberated that? The Third Army. You know how many people died there? Do you know what's in the center of the town square in Bastogne? A Sherman tank. You know, to honor General George S. Patton, who bailed their butts out. And this is the heart that we have. Look at the sacrifices that were made in World War II. We gave up our food,
We went into rationing. We had our women go from, you know, being housewives to ferrying fighters and bombers across our country or building the tools necessary to help to support the Army. We got together as a people, as a unified people. And that's what this nation is. Or was, I should say. Because, you know, back then, every single American had that patriot spirit. They looked at that old glory up there, and they knew that. They knew what it meant. And this means too much to allow to die. We can't let our nation down. I'm not going to sit around and look at literally the millions of Americans who bravely gave everything for this nation. Understand, I'm not going to let it be lost and be all in vain because of a group of self-serving individuals who care more about themselves than they do about their nation. And I know there's many, many, many people who feel the same as I. And it's time you get up off your duff and lead the way in your community and show and encourage your friends to do the same. Because you know something, if we don't, there'll be a day when you wake up and you will not have any rights at all. I mean, look, it's already happening. New York State, they're going around trying to confiscate your own firearms. And they're going to melt them down in New York City. Now, that's just Bloomberg going. It's already happening. We've already lost a good chunk of our first. The Second Amendment is on the borderline. The Fifth Amendment is all but gone. So if you want to have these God-given rights, and I'm saying God-given because that's who created, who gave us these rights. The Bill of Rights are essentially the Ten Commandments in the under of the Constitution. It's the 10 most important laws that this nation has. And over half of them have been attacked. Now, if we want to walk down the street being free, if we want to have our children have the ability and the right and the freedom to achieve the highest of all goals, I mean, if our child who's wants to be president, they can become president. But if we can allow the progressives to win, that will no longer be true. We already know this. History has shown it time and time again. What happens? Well, as soon as a democracy falls, it becomes a tyrant takes over and takes away all of our rights, and they're trying to do it now. So stand up, say enough is enough, and let's stop this before it gets any further. And God bless America, and to everybody out there, if we don't hear from you, we don't see you until after the holidays, Merry Christmas, and may God bless you in the coming year. And Scott, with that, I'll turn it over to you, and hopefully Red, too.
Yeah, excellent. Well, you know what? I've got to reload Red. We had a problem, and I got to get him back in there before we get to our Saturday show. Jennifer, great news for you there in Tuscaloosa. There's about 8 police cars flying up 14th Street from Tickler, howling and flashing their lights. That's from Tommy Mlade. Tommy Clayton, that truck just popped up. I thought I'd throw that in there. Something's going on. You know, you guys had great closing remarks. It's so important. You know, we fight this fight for a reason, and we are going to keep on keeping on. We're not going to stop. You know, Dave Souza remarked on one of the articles that I poked about our poor little six-year-old that's suspended for sexual harassment. He says this is an example of how our common sense is turning. And he says, stop Common Core in California. And that's what it's all about. We're going to keep on, keep on. We're going to keep doing it. Next week, you won't want to miss it. One of my favorite people, Kim Paris, and her Foundation for Common Sense. She took a rally for common sense 2 years in a row, and she's turned it into the Foundation for Common Sense. She's getting some good money behind her, making some great connections. We put together a cost for her, Jennifer Montrose and Dan. We put an online group support group for her, and we're going to be doing great things this next year. She's bringing on some people out of the team, and she's going to accomplish some great things. Getting some money, money's the hard part, and getting some money from people that have to people that have got some ideas and want to make it. And that's what we're going to do. Great show tonight, you guys. We're looking forward to this next year. I'm looking forward to it. About 3 weeks, we should be moving to Dallas. My sister is going to be heading there to Dallas this weekend to do some finalizing on housing for us. And then she'll come back, and we'll finish packing up and get in that car and head down I-40 or I-10, whichever way we decide to go. Been looking at the map and trying to decide, and then I'm going to start talking like this. And Contending for Truth Radio is going to be a little more south. Jennifer, I'm going to talk a little bit more like you, because you know what? When I went to college, my roommate was from Texas, and I came home my first semester. I started college in the middle of the term. I graduated high school in the middle of my senior year and started college the same weekend, actually. And my roommate was from Paris, Texas. And I came home at spring break, a couple of months of being in Texas, talking like this. And my mother says, where in the world? You went to school. You've been in Portland. You haven't been in Texas. I said, well, I don't know what happened. my roommate really went off on me. And I said, son, and all kinds of things. So who knows what kind of an accent I'm going to have after being down there for a little bit. I tend to pick that up. But we're excited about that move. We ask our listeners, keep us in your prayers on this. It's not going to be an easy move. We're leaving a lot of good friends here, especially those at my ladies' Bible class on Fridays. And if you get a chance, if you're listening now and you get a chance, tune in at 10:30 for ladies' Bible class here on Contending for Truth Radio. We've been studying the Old Testament. Some very dear, dear friends that have been sitting around the table for almost 5 years now, I think, teaching that class. And it's going to be really, really hard. And the kids are leaving and leaving their friends. And my sister, she's leaving and leaving some friends. And, boy, just the concept of getting this family that far down there on the road, it's going to be a long trip. So we're looking forward to that. We look forward to each week as we continue on. I believe Rodney's going to have a show tomorrow night. From the shed, he's probably going to pick up a couple of times when we don't have anything going on here at Blog Talk Radio on Contending for Truth Radio while he's in that shed. We're going to have Dave Souza on here relatively soon. We're going to get Jonathan Barbie back on. We're going to get Matt Jenkins back on. Jennifer, we need to start working on getting Nigel Innes on. We'd be a great guest. We're also going to get, as the new year starts, we're going to have Eric Rush on the show. We're working on that. We've got a great connection with him. He's a great guy. If you remember, he's the guy that took down the president's preacher for saying GD America. And he was the one that started all that. And he's working hard on some of the other things that we do. You know, it's not just political injustice we're dealing with here. We are also dealing with our judicial injustice. And we want to keep Don Miller in our prayers. We haven't talked a lot about Don Miller. We've got some big things coming. I would just say that. We've got some big things coming. And we will be getting back to that as soon as another couple of weeks goes on. We're going in the right direction, folks. So keep Don Miller in your prayers, and keep his family in our prayers. Folks, we're going to keep on keeping on. And I love D-Rock. Let me tell you, he's one of my favorite people. Dan, I know he's one of your favorite people. And tonight, we're going to go out in honor of what Rodney is doing. And if I'm talking a little bit, I'm doing this from outside, and I'm shaking. It's getting so cold, so we're going to end this thing up. But we're gonna play D-Rock's The Uniform. Thank you for listening to Continue for Truth Radio. If you've got any questions, you can email me at c4tradio@yahoo.com. That's c4tradio@yahoo.com. And we're going to let D-Rock take us out.
From sea to sea and faraway land, the American soldier understands. To protect and defend what we believe and keep America strong and living free. They see the damage and the pain. Shattered lives, wavering rain. Still they march on down that dangerous road, fighting for us, carrying the heavy load. I wanna thank you from my heart to those who wear the uniform for all you sacrificed to keep freedom alive, and to the families left behind, we'll stand by your side, and the bond will never be torn. I say a prayer and make a wish. You come home to loved ones that you've missed, and honor you the way that you deserve. Show you love far beyond what can be said in words. And I want to thank you from my heart to those who wear the uniform for all you sacrificed to keep freedom alive, and to the families left behind, we'll stand by your side, and the bond will never be torn. For those who wear the uniform, keep